When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favour to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. Repeat guest, and I'm really one that I've enjoyed talking to a few times in the past. My guest today is Mark Bennett. Mark, good afternoon. How are you, man?
Great to see you again. I'm not sure, is this our second or third? I lost count.
Do you know what? It might actually be the fourth one, Mark.
Fourth. Oh,
yeah, okay. It might actually be four. It could be third. It might be four, though. I think it might be four. Okay. But, you know, for those that haven't obviously dived into those previous conversations we've had, maybe just a brief insight around who you are, what you do, and we'll go straight from there.
Yeah, so because we've done podcasts before, I'll do a very brief one because actually people could go back and have a listen, couldn't they? But it's very much if you think about the big picture, my stuff's been over 30 years now working in business schools, primarily in sports, national level, international, pro, grassroots. But it's more about the software as opposed to the hardware. So how can I influence the coaches to allow them to make better judgment and how they can influence their athletes to increase engagement, decision making live? And a lot of the human factors in performance decision making unsupervised, you know, so as opposed to going, it's just about on the court, on the pitch. What can I do to change the way someone thinks so when they're on their own, they're still making those judgment decisions and committing to them and evaluating them? So I guess that's the short version. But the other key element to it is actually having real robust systems that not only give coaches some tools that they can apply, but also some really adherent strategies to help embed the change that's required, as opposed to going on a training course and going, oh, this is really good, give it a go for a couple of weeks and it disappears. So a lot of my stuff is working with organizations, coaches and teams, so they understand, and my support and challenge is very direct. Once we pre-agree something, for me to do what's needed to help them in the change that they've said that they need. So that's where it can be uncomfortable. And that's probably where my craft is at the highest level, is having those difficult conversations when they needed to have.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great point. It makes me think about some of the stuff I do as well. And I guess the word that kind of really jumps out to me is accountability. It's accountability, right? And obviously, you know, we've spoken on the podcast before, and, you know, before we've talked about the idea of maybe reflecting on it, how well we're having an impact on the participants we work with. In another situation, you know, we spoke about leisure versus performance individuals effectively. So, you know, for anyone obviously wants to kind of deep dive into those, they can go back and look at those episodes in particular. But I guess another layer that I'm really keen on exploring and discussing with you today is the idea of what does it look like to create that positive environment, and more specifically an engaging one. You know, what are things that we can kind of do as coaches or coach developers in many respects to foster that positive environment and yeah, really, really catch that engagement of those participants in the session, whether players or coaches.
Yeah, it's such a, this could be a 6-hour podcast just on that question, right? So it's the biggest challenge is to getting everybody to understand that if they're recognizing what they're doing now could be better, i.e. they want to increase engagement across all, not just the 10% that always speak, you know, whether it's at grassroots, I want people coming back, kids coming back, keep coming and bring their friends. Or actually at elite level, I don't want somebody that's no longer being picked for the first choice to stay engaged in training sessions, in video analysis, to be ready on the bench when they're ready to go on. So that the diversity of what that engagement looks like, the difficult element people will always have, which is where the most important place point is recognizing what's actually happening of where you are, what's working every time, what's not. And then when we get the what's not, is can you identify the source of where the not yet, the not bits are? So what I mean by that is the source me at self? Is there the source of actually we as an organization aren't really clear on what our lighthouse is and what our behaviors are across the board? We chat about it, but have we really made it clear? And then the big element to that is who are the influencers and have we won the hearts and minds with them to allow them to be the supporters and the champions of the very shifts we need, as opposed to them could be the antagonists of all the work we're doing. So a lot of it is actually establishing, you know, what are we doing already that's working consistently? And is it working for everyone as opposed to my 10, 20% that always engage, always speak? But then where are the gaps? You know, where are the influences that we need to go, right, we need, this is where we need our investment. And that as a question is very hard to answer unless you're really open to being more the detective, more than a generalization. I, you know, the thing, oh no, we've got our mission statement, Mark, you know, it's on the wall. We share it every preseason. You go, okay, what does it look like now? Excuse me. So if it's that, it's that connection to, do I know where is it I need to change, but also do I need the source of where the barrier is the key point to begin with.
Yeah, no, it just, as you're speaking, it just gets me thinking about some of my own experiences, more specifically in coach development. And the question I kind of have started asking a lot of coaches to think about is, how do you prove what you're doing is working? And it comes to it from a point of, you know, we'll all, as coaches, have our ideas of what we want to be doing with our participants, what we think is going to work and what we believe to be best practice. But something obviously in what you've said there is really about having a more consciously aware, conscious but deliberate and intentional approach to developing your awareness of what you're doing and why you're doing it, and whether it is individualized. But something else that came to mind as you were speaking there is ensuring a level of consistency. And ensuring a level of consistency from a standpoint of, well, you want to keep a consistent environment, but you also got to be very subtle in your understanding that that consistent environment might not interact well with everyone within it. So as much as it is consistent, it's also got to be inconsistent in many ways. You know, that's where my kind of mind's going with it straight away. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, or if there's something that you feel like, you know, we can unpack further in there.
Yeah, there's two critical points that you've highlighted there. One is how you're measuring success. So we've got to make sure, one is, do we know how we're measuring it? And actually, does the measures align to our lighthouse? You know, what is our club? So an example may be, and I'll take this is just my opinion, I'll take this as an inaccurate and ineffective measure of success, is a grassroots team measuring success by wins or losses. So now what we're saying is, well, hang on a minute, what's your mission statement? And if the mission statement for that club is enjoyment, engagement, fun, you know, building better people, if that's the mission statement, then you go, okay, well, if you're measuring success of that based on score lines in matches and where you finish in your mini league, then your measures are not aligned to your vision. So already now there's a contradiction in how we're measuring stuff. So we've got to be identifying, how are we measuring the very facilitators that is going to build us to where we want to see, whatever that looks like, sounds like, feels like? So that's one element. The second element is that consistency point. So if we're talking about changing human behavior, we are starting at very difficult. That's the reality of changing human behavior. I mean, if you're an example would be, though, it's very easy. If you've got people all buying McDonald's breakfast and then you open a bar next door and you go, yeah, we'll do the same, but guess what? Ours is free. you're probably going to get a quick shift in the behavior there, go free food. But when we're talking about sport, business, school, we're talking about actually what are the things we're doing. And it may be for a coach is, you know, I need to cover this content. So I'll be, you know, I'll be directing them what to do in a solution. I mean, actually, in fact, now I'm looking at that and I'm saying, wow, I'm reducing the engagement. And actually, the only players I speak to are the same five or six because I get the answer I want from them. And now I'm scanning and looking because now I've identified what my measures are for success for, let's say, for that grassroots club. Actually, I'm not engaging hardly any. It's a small amount. And how am I doing that? I'm doing that because I'm preventing them from having the freedom to speak. So do I know they have the tools, the confidence? Am I giving them the space? Am I building the environment that's going to take time back to the consistency point of understanding this is not going to happen overnight? So I could share this and some people might go, oh, why is he sharing this? You know, I don't like this. I'm comfy saying nothing and just following everyone around. But then even if you get everyone going, yeah, I see the value in it, which is different than liking, we've got to understand that that may take months of us being consistent in what we've agreed we're going to do before the actions are applied in the way we want them to. And that's where that non-linear up and down, people are having a bad day, they revert back. You're having a bad day, you revert back. So the alignment between the behaviors required to facilitate the change and the change you see are not symbiotic. So, you know, one is you can be consistent, which is tough anyway, in changing your own behaviors in what you're looking for, how you're saying, how you're communicating. But then the outcome you want is going to go up and down. And that may happen for months. So the consistency in your intervention may become more consistent, but the actions that you want to see, the behaviors because of your interventions, will be inconsistent because we're changing human nature.
I think, you know, within that, then obviously it surely becomes a bit more challenging then for us as coaches and coach developers to assess and measure success then, right?
Yes. And this is where a good coach developer will have, and I know there are words thrown around, but wisdom and judgment. So what a coach developer needs to be, the same as a coach needs to be with a team of players when they look to the coach for confidence, is that that coach developer needs to understand and project that level of confidence to their coach. Go, look, this is, and I do it with my people I'm coaching, go, look, this is how difficult it's going to be. This is the barriers we may face. And the chances are if we don't face them, something's going wrong because everybody has. So this is what we're going to see. But when this point comes along, I'm here for you. And this is the discussion we're going to have. So Then the coach that's attempting the change, as opposed to going, well, I've done this, now it's not working, they've got a bit more conscious awareness in their mind to go, well, actually, my mentor said this could happen. And actually, when I turn to my mentor, two things are going to happen. My mentor is going to be there to support me. But also when I don't do, because I want to take the shortcut now, that mentor is going to challenge me. And they're going to challenge me on the things that they've pre-agreed. And I need that. I may not like it in the moment, but that's what I need. But now I've got consistency from the mentor in the behaviors. And I've got a bit of confidence that, okay, she, he has seen this before. Oh, okay, I'll keep going.
I think it's a challenge there, isn't there? Because sometimes, and this is something I've been wrestling with recently, if as the mentor in this process, you can already, as you put it, you know, use your wisdom and your judgment to identify, do you know what, you can kind of, I don't want to say predict, but you can anticipate what's going to happen off the back of what you've seen so far, if that makes sense. At what point do you still let them go through it? Or do you decide, actually, I can see where this is going to end up, so I'm going to put a stop to it now? Does that make sense? Because I think for some people, they need to go through those experiences to really appreciate and value what the insight would have been anyway. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's where that the principle of that rule of three I use with players, I use as a mentor with coaches, and the action review process I get coaches to use with players, I use with the coaches. So it's that principle of I train them in it first so they understand. So this is a way where we can make good judgment. We can commit to the choices that we see aligned to where we want to be. And then once we commit into them, we can review our commitment, our choice and our execution. So now what we're saying is, if you put that in the eyes of a coach, what we're saying is I'm rule of three now as a mentor. Coaches are at rule of two with each other. and at Salford one. So now I'm looking ahead and I go, right, I've got a good baseline now of this team and these coaches. I now, based on my experience, can see potentially what's could happen in regressions or barriers. And so I prime it first. So we agree, okay, what if this happens? And prime them, this could happen, but that's okay. But let's agree, if you do this, what permission you're going to give me to challenge you. So now we've got that in place, so there's no gray area. So then when we move forward, unless it's a safety issue, then I'm saying, okay, each moment, as opposed to let them trip up and drown, when they trip up, I'm going to be there to make sure, can you review that for me? So now they action review themselves in that moment, as opposed to a wait for a week or 2 weeks, and now they've had it a lot of times, and then they start to unravel.
Sure. So, I mean, I'm just thinking about a particular situation I had recently where delivering on a course, there's a whole bunch of coaches that I'm working with on the course, and I've tried to develop a positive and consistent environment for all of them, and one that's been, you know, safe challenge, if you like. So high challenge, high support kind of environment. And you get one coach who turns around and says, actually, no, I want.
Okay, so I've got 10 coaches, given the first, let's just say 9 coaches, a consistent message, which clearly just isn't landing.
Or rather, the message is landing, but the application of it in reflection hasn't been sufficient. You see coach number 10 step up to the plate. And you can see from the get-go, they're going to make the exact same mistake the first 9 did. How would you approach it?
So this is where when I set up, either using Slack, some in the States use it, or WhatsApp most of the time, we set up a group where coaches share hot and cold reviews after sessions and matches. We also share where their work on is, what their focus is. Each coach shares that. And then we set up that rule of three in that group, and they do end of week review and action. So it's a review and action, because at the end of the week, and they agree a day by midday Friday, whatever they decide, I generally do it before a match. So then they're reviewing without a scoreline interfering with how they thought the week went. So they review first. This is what I said I was going to do. This is my work on how did I do? Bang, 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 bang. And then I look at, okay, so what's my focus moving forward for the next week? So every coach does that, but because after every practice session is pre-agreed, they do a verbal hot review. So a few minutes where they go, "This, how's my state in the session? This was success. How did I do on the interventions?" All the other coaches in that session would hear that. I hear it. So then if there's, and they all do that, senior coach should go last. So the junior coaches don't listen. No one should be listening to each other before they do it. Just share it, be raw. And then once I've had a chance to listen to each other's, the next day, or when, particularly after matches, when the emotions are calmed down, ideally when they've watched, if they're at a level where they can watch a match or a session afterwards, they then do a cold review where they go, actually, yeah, I was a bit down on myself there, or actually, no, I didn't commit to what I said I was going to do. In reflection, this is what I'm spotting. So what we're doing there is we're getting them to be using the action review process to get them to be more consciously verbalizing the reflections on their actions in key moments. And they could do that at video analysis in a one-to-one meeting, whatever it may be. So what we're not allowing them to do is rely on me to give them feedback as their first primary call. We're not allowing them to isolate other coaches, because other coaches now are sharing. And that can often happen with head coach. They'll isolate by means they don't really want feedback from their assistant coaches. If it's an emotional or you're going to challenge them on stuff, they just want it if, oh, you did great, coach. So we're breaking those barriers down, but because it becomes organic, so they'll be doing this 2-3 times a week, by the time it gets to the end of the week, they're more aware of, did they commit to what they said? How were their choices? So you're less likely for somebody to repeat what everyone else has done as an error, because it's becoming this really functional, formalized, but organic process of self-evaluation and sharing. But based on clinical state, work on choices, execution, not just, you know, like some people go, can you review that? They'll just waffle, because there's no framework for reflection. That's where the action review process helps.
So let's just build on that then, you know, that framework of review and reflection, because I think this is a big area for a lot of coaches and coaches in general. in terms of what does effective review look like. And I'm really pleased about what you've just shared there as well, because when I work with coaches and even with players, I always try and go in and make it clear. Well, I want a hot reflection and a cold reflection. I want to know what it is that comes to mind straight away, and I want to know, does that still kind of stand the test of time, for lack of a better way of describing it, when you've now removed yourself from the situation and we catch up in a week or two later? Because, like, and I like the idea that, you know, you do it before you get to the game day, where emotions probably have taken over completely. So you have got some still element of kind of detachment and control over your emotional state, if you like. How do you gauge that process, or what does that process look like, and what is it, you know, is there effective strategies that you kind of have utilized with coaches in particular that you feel like, yeah, this has been a really useful way to do it? And maybe what are some kind of nuances to that, where maybe a coach might need different type of support, if that makes sense?
Yeah, it's the framework has to be meet them where they are at stretch. So with some of my clients, I can go straight in and go, right, you know, let's start with the hot reviews. Within a week, we're doing hot and cold reviews. You know, within 2 weeks, we're doing end of week reflections. Within a week, they're challenging each other and healthy conversation, and they're not leaving upset. They're going, great. So player first, player last, same principle. Okay, so what have we agreed by this conversation? So then there's an agreement and they commit to it. I have other clubs where that to get to that same level might take 2 months, and I would be doing a lot of work in little one-to-one voice messages, little conversations outside the group, to sometimes a direct challenge where I think my judgment is you as head coach are not ready to be challenged in front of your assistant coaches in a WhatsApp group or on my weekly Zooms, which I'll have with a bigger team. So even there's a Zoom with me there. So I would do that direct, but everything I do, I make sure we pre-agree it first. So the pre-agreement and the value is, I think, where people trip up. There's a bit of gray in the pre-agreement. So I'm really clear on, look, this is a suggestion. This is why I'm sharing it with you. This is a value it's going to bring. Here are some of the challenges. Where are we with that? Are you up for committing to that or not early on?
So it's part, again, a word that you used earlier was permission. So as part of that pre-agreement, actually gaining permission to sometimes go outside of what's been pre-agreed, because surely there's going to be moments where something may or may not happen, which might encourage you to take a slightly different approach in that moment than what's been agreed.
It's always organic. So remember, the pre-agreements wouldn't be really tight and strict. The pre-agreements would be around the action review, the rule of three, challenge and support. So that would be, if you don't commit to what you've agreed, you're giving me permission to challenge you, but I'm at three. So if I'm challenging you, something's gone wrong, because it should be peers first, so in a coaching group. So a great example is, you know, I get it often where if I have a weekly Zoom set up with them, and they're late for the Zoom with me. This is at elite level. So immediately I make sure the value is in our behaviors and what we do beforehand. So if we being in time as opposed to being on time, what does that look like, being in time compared to on time? I'm ready early. Great. So what would that look like on our weekly Zooms? Because I know in advance it's happened in the past. So I prime the team. Now, straight away, for something like that, if they're late, as soon as they start the Zoom, I go, okay, so what do you think I'm going to ask you now, team? You know, with a smile, for friendly. And they go, oh, whoa. So, okay, so remind me what we said, and just work through the process I'm asking to do with the athletes. Remind me what we said on time and being in time. Okay. So what prevented you from being in time today? I'm interested. And this may be the first time they've felt a marked challenge, but it's something that's simple. It's something that goes, they're not expecting it, but it has to be lined. So then they're like, well, this is a bit uncomfortable. We don't normally have an external client that would say anything on this stuff. There might be a jovial little comment, but not, hang on, let's review this. So then if you go, oh, it's because of this, 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 and go, okay, that's no problem because it's our first time. But what's your strategy in place to prevent it from happening again? Outside the controllables are the electricity's gone down, but the stuff that we know we can challenge. So then they go, okay, we're going to do this to ensure. Okay, great, done. Do a virtual fist punch on the screen. And what am I going to do next time? I'm going to be scanning for it. And if there's a shift where they're in time, I'll just do another at the beginning, go, awesome. And we move on. So for why I'm sharing that as an example is that because the what ifs are very organic is, look, all we're going to do, we're going to challenge each other on what we pre-agree is one. The second one is I'm going to use my judgment as mentor, a rule of three. If I feel somebody's going too far off something we haven't discussed, then I will step in and trust my judgment that I'm doing it for the right reasons. That's that rule of three, stepping in. So there's always that case of you. It's a bit like you and I would never be able to share everything with anyone we mentor because there's decades of experience. So you're going, I'm filtering what I'm sharing with you now because this is where I think you're ready. But if something pops up that is relevant that I haven't yet shared, it's time for me to highlight that now because it's come up. No one expected it, and it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. And it rings true for me. And I just think about certain moments where I think about one recently where I've supported a coach. They've put some stuff into practice, applied it, and it's gone really well. Now, they're right. What I would deem to be of a level that they need to be based on where they're at in their journey. But the challenge I had for them is I then observed them again about 6 to 8 weeks later. And I'm saying, well, yeah, but you're still doing what you did 6 to 8 weeks ago. There's no change. And I guess for me, a large part of that process is about shifting the mindset. Yeah, you might have, what you did 6 weeks ago was good enough, but I know you can do that now. I want to know. Take us to the next level, right? So it's come back to what you said. I want to stretch you further now, because if my role is to help you succeed, then part of that role is to help you build and build and build on whatever it is that you're demonstrating. Now, if in on the flip side of that, if I need to then scale things back for you, then it is what it is. But effectively, it's a retrain of the mindset, right? In terms of, right, we need to constantly grow and develop. So I guess coming back to what you said there, what about in the case of an individual who's maybe just not getting it? Because that bit can happen as well. And I know what you're saying in terms of, you know, filtering the information out and understanding what they maybe do or don't need. But what happens if in the name of accountability, they're still not following suit, if that makes sense?
Yeah, so there's a tool that I use, that I developed, that I use in management a lot, but we still use in coaching. I still use it, and it's a bit, there's depth of layers around the player first, player last. So for anyone that hasn't listened to any other podcasts of mine, I think we may have covered it on one of yours, is the player first, player last is a principle of interaction. So if we relate it in a simple version of, I'm a coach, I'm seeing a player do something on the pitch or on the court. So what I do is I call them over. And instead of me asking a ton of questions, because we've already explained what we're going to do, they come on and go, can you just review what happened over there? So I've given no clues. I've given no information. I'm not asking leading questions. I'm just interested. And I am interested. So then they speak first. So they go, and once you've taught them the action review process, they go, right, this is what I saw. These were the options I identified. This is what I'm from some choice. I reckon I nailed the execution. Wouldn't change a thing. Or actually, in reflection, should have gone for this option. So that's given me data. Now, it may, when I'm listening to it, it may be, right, you missed a choice there. When you shared all the choices, there's one you missed. So now I can see there's a source issue. That may be scanning or game management. But now I have an interaction, whatever that is, and the player last is the critical point. So the player last is, and there's, you can come up with anything you want, but in generally, it would be either, these are the common ones. So what have we agreed? That is my question to them. Now they have to speak. What are you going to commit to? That's my question. Now they have to speak. So the player last is always them speaking. Now I'm really listening with intent to go. What I'm asking myself is, are you copying the words that I've said through the discussion? Or are you actually explaining it in a way of your execution? Now, if I'm doubtful there, that's when I delve in and go, well, okay, well, what would that look like? Or what if this happens? So what that means is that, and I do this on Zoom with management and business as well, I get senior managers to do it when someone's done something wrong at junior management. Don't have a go at them. Player first, player last, talk me through it. So now we can spot the source, but the player last at the end of a meeting. So what are we, can we go around the room? What have we agreed? And I'm listening now, I'm not adding. So if that's done effectively, the reduction in them not quite understanding is huge. Now you add in then the hot and the cold reviews, the end of week. So you're not going to go longer than 7 days before you're getting some sort of connection back of the big picture of that week, where you can start doing some interventions in there based on their work on and where their focus was. So we could have an individual work on, but often with teams, they've agreed in the Zoom I have with me or live, where we say, okay, this week, where's our focus going to be as a team? And it may be a singular coach. So they may have their work on, but actually on the hardware stuff, on the skill stuff, it may be, right, I'm going to make sure I'm going to engage players that I did not engage the week before. However discomfort that's going to be, because I know I'm not going to get them to communicate as much, but that's my commitment this week, Mark. So for me, I'm hearing that and I go, that's a nice general answer. Straight away, I'm hearing that and go, nice general answer. And go, okay, how are you going to build that into the week? And now I'm getting to think, okay, so how many sessions you got? Oh, I've got 3 sessions or 5, 6, whatever. So each session, are you targeting certain people to get them involved? How are you priming them? How are you auditing, you know, the success? Oh, I haven't really thought about that. Okay, so what's that going to look like? Now they've got more of a visual strategy of understanding of application, which now is giving me more confident that they're more likely to commit to it. Now, if I'm hearing now they're hot and cold reviews and they're not mentioning it within the first session, I can then voice message them back or a little message to go, okay, talk to me about your focus for the week. You didn't mention that on the hot review straight away. So the beauty of it is when it's really clear like that, there isn't a lot of time left where I have to do an intervention because there's data shared where I can do one early.
Yeah. And I guess as I'm listening to that, it just reminds me of some of the stuff that I'm big on is effectively just actually checking understanding.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's, you know, go back to your example, if you're just repeating some of the words that I've used, a lot of coaches will be happy with that and say, yeah, they've understood it. But I I'm thinking out loud now about what you've just said, and I think to myself, I find myself doing that quite a lot when players or even coaches that I'm working with say, yeah, you know, I try and avoid using the question, does that make sense? Or do you understand? And I often go with something of the sort that, you know, can you explain to me what you think I'm looking for here? Or can you show me what you've understood from what we've just discussed, just to really clarify and measure that understanding, not because I'm saying there's a right way to understand it, but then there's also a part of me that says, give them what they need and let them get on with it. And if what they've taken from it is enough for them to get going, then leave it where it is, because they don't need to know every bit of detail to the, you know, in every single, in the exact way that you've explained it, as long as they've got a picture and a snapshot of what the message was, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and that's there's two elements there. Well, there's many, but the two main ones is when it's interesting, really, because when you hear some on social media, you know, discourage, you go, never say that, that's a negative. So does that make sense as a question? There's nothing wrong with that as a question if it's appropriate for the person you're communicating with. So you could use that with me and I could use that for you, because I know if you heard that and you didn't, you go, you'd ask me another question. So it is appropriate. Now, if I'm just using that as a sentence finisher, then that's ineffective because it's not a sentence finisher. You know, I'm getting nods. Okay, well, I need to delve in with some questions now. So what are you going to do? The second point to that is irrelevant whether it's unsupervised or supervised. What I mean by that is if I'm there, and we've done a player last and we're going, okay, so what are you going to commit to? Or what does that mean to you? Whatever, you know, that player last, they've now told me, I'm now scanning. So they've walked off or ran off. I'm now scanning for the next opportunity. Are they committing to what they've just said they were going to do? Which may not be straight away in a gameplay. It might take a few minutes for that opportunity to arise. So now I'm in the quote that I often use is, don't tell me, show me. So you give me the right answer. You told me the right answer. But what I'm looking for now is, can you show me the actions of that answer? So we're not developing academics, we're developing practitioners, right? So it's no good an athlete coming off or a coach and giving you all the right answers, but now you're looking at the video or you were there and you're going, yeah, but I'm not seeing that. The answers are brilliant, but I'm not seeing that here. So where's the disparity?
That is part of the assessment of understanding, right? Because it's all well and good you've got this knowledge, but you're not able to apply it, and I guess the application of that is a demonstration of
how much of that knowledge is actually consolidated in essence.
Yeah, and it's not, I think this is another important point. It's not outcome we're looking at, it's the commitment to the action. Your capability of the action will determine the outcome. So the outcome's not a fair indicator of success. So sure. If it's a low skill or a new skill, all we're looking for is you've made a choice and you're committing to that action that you may not be able to do yet. There's where the success is.
And I think within that, it just gets me thinking around some of the conversations I've had with coaches, aligned to what you're saying there is, I'm not looking to see how well it turns out. But if it doesn't turn out well, for whatever reason, what I'm looking for is your ability to understand and identify why it wasn't well in the way that we wanted it to, or why it maybe if it did go well, or what allowed that to occur.
Yeah, and let's look at a curveball on that as well in soccer, rugby, you know, hockey, lacrosse, etc. Is sometimes somebody will make a choice. So an example in soccer, that they're deciding there's a player really open, the right choice based on developing the principles, the 99% success rate is that pass into that player that's totally open on the wing, no one around them. But this player has decided not to do that and dribble it through three players and scored. So the outcome may be, I scored, it was a great choice. And you're saying in that moment, yes, but look at if you did that 10 times compared with the person opening space, where would be success? So it's understanding what the success is. If the success is we're building some principles that are going to allow us to adapt to certain opposition, then we need, and you're used to dribbling the ball as a player, you're limiting your skill level. So for us, success with that player may be, I'm going to look for committing to that pass I can see is a better option because I'm always dribbling the ball, I'm never passing. So then reviewing the success, may even if the outcome's correct, it may not be aligned to, but what do we say success was? Review against that.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. And again, it just takes my mind to this phrase that I've started using in recent months, which is, as a coach, are we observing the game through our eyes or their experience, right? Because I think the better thing to identify and understand is, well, why did they make the choice they made?
Yeah.
As opposed to disagreeing or agreeing with the choice they made, is developing the understanding of the reasons why. Because, and this talks, you know, this links in quite well to a conversation I was having yesterday around scanning, you know, in football in particular. The coach is always talking about players being able to scan the pitch, and I'm saying, well, how do you measure scanning? Because if it's just based on a physical action, then you probably don't learn much about it other than the number of times they've potentially done it. But really, what the measurement that you want to be getting is what they're scanning for and how they processed it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the influence it's going to have on them? Because fundamentally, us as individuals, if you put us in the same situation, we're going to be contesting with the same variables. And that's not the bit that's left open to debate, if you like. The question I think that's left open to debate is, well, what influence or what impact do these variables have on us as individuals? Because I could see a gap of, I don't know, 2 feet wide and think, yeah, that's a good enough gap for me. And you might see that and thinking, hell no, it's not going to happen. But that's, again, that reflection in action piece, right? And understanding, oh, I can see the opportunity there, but it's not one that's for me, if that makes sense. In which case, you also get to the point of challenging players around, well, what is the information you're processing? Why have you chosen to process it? And what have you disregarded within the information processing process, if that makes sense?
Yeah, so that's where that player first, player last, in line with the action review process. So imagine that situation, you've just seen a player, you're not stood where they are, you should be clear on your head of what you've pre-agreed success is. So if you're pre-agreeing with this player, whether it's a senior or junior, to really make it more difficult the opposition, you need to have a variety of choices commit to in this situation, because you always dribble. So if you always dribble, the opposition can know he's got the ball, she's got the ball, right, it's going to dribble, let's just load players around that player. But if they know, oh, he, she may dribble or may pass that wide shot, now I'm second guessing. So if it's to develop that player in that expansive, committing to a variety of choices, as opposed to always just going for this choice, any pressure, I always dribble it. Any pressure, I always kick, you know, that type of player. I still need to go, okay, Jimmy, Sarah, next opportunity, over we come. Can you just talk to me what happened over there? And then they go for, right, this is what I saw. These were the options I identified. This is what influenced my choice. I'm just listening to that because I don't even have the questions because it's been trained in them. So now based on that data, I'm going, oh, okay, now it's worth me having a conversation because it may go, based on what you said there, it was exactly the right thing to do because where you stood, you didn't see that player was open. So was that you weren't looking for it, or was it where you were stood, there were players in between that I haven't got that meant you couldn't see that player? But that's given me the data then. Now, it may be from that data that they, again, as soon as we put them in a game situation, they're continuing to do the same thing they always do. So then we may put a constraint in and go, right, for this next 10 minutes, in those situations, you can't dribble. You've got to choose another option. If that's an intervention to grow the player, not in that session, not to score the goal, but actually to develop that player for the next few months, then that may be an intervention. But like you're saying there, we need to get them to be able to express a judgment more effectively and more confidently to a coach and to other players to allow us to better understand them, to allow us to support them.
Yeah, and equally, I think it's allowing them to better understand their own selves, right? Because I guess this leads to that piece around unconscious versus conscious competence. How well do they know what they're doing, and how well do they know that they're doing something? And in my opinion, if we can get players moving more to that conscious competence piece and understanding they're able to do certain things, and develop their understanding of what maybe informed or influenced their ability and decision to make, to execute on the decision that they've chosen to go with, if you like, then surely they become more attuned to searching for those variables and those sequences, if you like, and those kind of formulas. Because, you know, I guess that's probably one way of looking at it, in the sense that, well, I've seen this. Based on what I've seen, I should be doing this, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and there's so many variables into that of where we are within the players we're talking about and actually where we need to build them to. So let's just look at a few of those variables. If you're in a team, you've got the combination capability that I talk about. And that what that means is that with the players on your pitch, they'll all have individual capability in their fitness, their speed, what state they're in that moment, and their skill level. So based on that, they will inform the choice you may make. So you may have a high skill winger, very fast. So an option is, I can do that long pass into that open space because I know Jimmy will sprint onto it. Stevie's now on the wing. Stevie's slow, he's tired, he's been on for 30 minutes. He won't get to that ball. That option is now on. So this is where I think some coaches trip up a little bit. They're so caught up in video analysis and telling them that this is an option we can use. When this happens, you do this, like ABC, as opposed to understanding the human factors of the team, that to say, actually, there's not a right and a wrong, there's judgment. But if you can understand better the judgment, if you can understand the human variables of opposition and you itself and teammates, you're going to start making better choices. But importantly, you'll be able to evaluate them live. So you can make those adaptations. You'll be able to communicate peer-to-peer with that event because that's going to help you next time.
But I guess even that's subjective, right?
In the sense, judgment is, right? Judgment is subjective.
And I think that's the key piece. But I think, again, listening to you speak about it there, I'm just coming back to some of the interactions I have with not only players but coaches as well. And really getting them to kind of examine, what did I see that made me make that decision? Did I even notice that that's what I saw at the time? Or was it instinct? Was it intuition? Yeah, but intuition is often led by something that you've observed. There's some information that you've processed, which has made you take that action. And, you know, something that you talked about earlier in terms of effectively holding people accountable is that, you know, there's a notion that we should, as coaches, we should often try and catch people doing it well and not always catch them doing it wrong. Because there is, I think there is a connotation to coaching which suggests that it's much more about error correction rather than praise and reinforcements, which I understand and I accept. But actually, it's both ends of the spectrum for me. It's understanding when to do what, when to recognize and step in on best practice. And something that I talk about a lot is, how do we get coaches to better understand and recognize and acknowledge for players when great has just become good? Because great was, yeah, I'm really pleased. It's great because you've gone above and beyond maybe what was expected. But now that I've seen you do it consistently enough, it's not something worth praising anymore, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and again, there's a few elements in there. There's that point of the UAEs that I call them, the agreeing, acceptable, unacceptable, exceptional, is organic. It moves. So something that was exceptional 3 months ago might be unacceptable now because we are better now. And the other thing, one of my pet hates is, you know, that old, that always gets flown around, fashionable every few years, is the you win or you learn statement. No, you learn or you don't learn. That's a reality. Winning is a scoreline, but there's too many variables. You know, you may have closely won, you may have punched above your weight, performed the best you ever have, and you've won the game. Well, hang on a minute, what choices, what was different there? You may have won because the opposition were terrible and you've just got a higher capability team that was playing still substandard. Well, there's a learning there. You may have lost, but you've done everything you can. You were just against a high capability team, but every choice you did was phenomenal. So we've got to, if we're reviewing matches as an example differently when we win or when we lose or by what margin, we're not effectively evaluating. So that's one element side. But I think the other point is that if we're talking about judgment, especially from a coach point of view, bringing it back to that, is we've just got to raise the awareness to coaches understanding, how is my state? How is my scanning now? Am I getting caught up in a scoreline? Do I have biases now with certain players or situations? You know, what am I, where am I right now to allow me to, am I looking for the right things? Am I giving them space? Okay, what are my options now before I do an intervention? And start that self-talk, as opposed to just going, right, I'm caught up now. Oh, you know, we've just scored, or, you know, oh, he never does it right. Right, I'm going to be having a go at him. I don't like Jimmy. Oh, Billy is brilliant. So all of a sudden now I'm filtering what I'm seeing because of my biases or my state, or I'm getting caught up in things I shouldn't be. So if we're talking about judgment, the challenges an athlete would have, I would suggest, particularly in matches, is at least double from a coach interference, from allowing them to step back, not get caught up, breathe, scan. Okay, what am I seeing? Where are the trends? Where's the source? Okay, so what are my interventions options? Now I've identified a source. Okay, let's commit to them. Now I do the player first, player last. Now that's happened. Now I'm scanning. How effective was my intervention and my choice as a coach? Okay, what's happening now? So that's self-reviewing, the same as we're asking an athlete to do as a coach in practice and matches, is a bit of a game changer for a lot of coaches.
Yeah, I guess one of the challenges that it will exist within that, right, though, is that I might have had an interaction with you, I may have had an intervention with you, which is landed effectively with you in the sense of you've been able to digest it, consolidate and understand what we've discussed, what we've interacted over. However, breeding confidence into application of that is also another challenge that could maybe conflate and distract us from what the judgment of assessment for understanding was. Does that make sense?
No.
So if I have an interaction with you, you may have understood it, you may have consolidated what that was in terms of, you get the message that I'm giving you. You understand it makes sense, you can, but you're still not applying it because of the element of, well, it gets your confidence in being able to apply it, but rather than it being a lack of understanding of it. Does that make sense?
So, yes, there's a few layers to this though. So these are only principles, they are not black and white, but a principle would be, there's two, they're layer into each other, but the first principle would be, I would, my judgment, part of my judgment in matches, I would never ever put a combination out that has not been practiced and tested. As an example, I would never ask a player to do something unless it's been tested under pressure that they can execute. So that's one element of my judgment. And am I asking players to do something never done under pressure or test level? Then I shouldn't be asking it. The other element to that is, it's so imperative, going back to the first point of engagement and building, breaking down the barriers, that I need to have a level of dialogue with players. And we've done this down to 6-7 year olds. It's not just seniors, where they can say, honestly, I'd be struggling to execute that right now. You know, I'm not confident I can do that right now, but I can do this. So we still need them solution based, but build a process where we're saying, okay, we need honesty. So it's not like being fearful. And then are we now taking what the data we're finding in matches and we're building practices over weeks where we're saying, okay, I mean, I use three different types of practice, learn it, perform it, challenge it. So a learn it is, we do things we can't yet do. There's no outcome. So players are understanding, oh, okay, no problem. I'm doing stuff that I want to get better at, I can't yet do. Let's just commit. It's an expiration of committing to the choice. Now we're starting to do them. Now we go, now we're in performance, so it's game-like. Let's see now at full speed, full competition, normal practice, but it's game. We're still applying them when we're not talking about them. Have they been integrated within our game now and seeing things? Then the challenge is overtly saying to the players, my cap is now spinning. My goal is now is to, I'm going to see if I can break down what you've shown me you can do. So I'm going to put certain situations in, I'm going to whisper in the ear of certain opposition. I'm going to do everything to see if I can break down what we've shown we can do in performance. So your challenge is not to let me do that. And my challenge is to see if I can do it. So now we really see where the breakages are within certain elements. And now we go, okay, there's a little breakage there. Okay, I can now start put some interventions. I may pull it back to performance, load it again. Maybe they're missing something now. I can load that and we go back into challenging again. So that's given me the real data. So that data in challenge is what I need to use in a match. That's given me, I know this player now can do this. Not only that, I know the player now knows at challenge it level, they can execute these processes. And now I put a different cap on in match. I'm doing everything I can to get the best out of the players, but it's given me better judgment on what could I ask of the players, but I still need a player to go, coach, this moment right now, I don't think I can commit to that, but I can do this. And that's that great coach that I think are very good at in those moments under pressure of getting it, having that whispering ear conversation when mayhem is going on to help that player go, okay, so what can we do? Okay, give me that now. Great.
Yeah. It takes my mind to something I was speaking to someone about yesterday, and that so obviously, especially in football, we talk about it a lot. I'm sure it exists in some way, shape, or form, if not exactly the same in other sports. Realism, relevance, repetition, the three R's around practice design, right? And the way I explain it is, you know, you've got to think of it as it is effectively a spectrum or a seesaw in some respects. And in the middle of the seesaw, the pivot is irrelevance. That's the thing that without relevance, it's just never going to work. But you can sacrifice on the realism and you can sacrifice on the repetition. But you can't sacrifice on either or. You can't have both or have none. There's got to be some realism or there's got to be some relevance. But the thing is, and I'm tying it into what you've just said there, effectively, in the learn it part, you might go with a lot of repetition. In the challenging part, it might be more based on realism, right? But the one thing that's not negotiable there is the relevance of it, so that you go to a point where in the learning, you're almost developing an understanding of a concept. So it might not be in action per se in relation to the game, but at some point as a coach, you have to take them from that concept to the real aspect of it. And I guess that kind of speaks to, I guess, if a player turns around and says, you know what, I get it, but I'm not able to apply it right now. And I guess the challenge then becomes is, well, in that learn it piece, and I think this is something that has just got my mind ticking now, is that let's just set them an objective. let's not worry about how well they can do it to start with, and let's just make sure they understand the concept of what we're going after. In which case, as time develops, we can then gauge and amend or adapt our interventions and our support for the individuals based on where they're at on their journey, to then lead to tie it into the realism. Does that make sense?
So in essence, in Learn It, it's because there's a breakdown somewhere. Now that may be a man on where you're positioning yourself within the opposition. It could be something as simple as that. That's the error that's causing everything else to go. Because I'm now letting them to get on the right side, and that's exactly where I don't want. So if I don't get there, nothing else is going to work. It may be that. It may be game like. But what we're doing is we may be half court, half pitch. But what we're looking at, we've still got a clear clarity of what success is for me. But there is no outcome process now. So, right, I'm now going to commit to this because I need to commit to it, because that's how I'm going to get better. Once we get to a point where we're going, okay, yeah, it's happening now to a level of acceptable. Okay, well, let's go straight into performance now. We're at full pitch, full court. You may even be half and you're going, right, let's just load up now. Game rules, bam, bam, bang, full speed. We're not doing little breakouts. We go, go, go. There's less time of me stepping in as a coach. I might be doing hot one-to-ones rotating, but we're looking at the transfer now. Now, the beauty of that is it's non-linear. So it may be you're in learning, and I always put to develop coaches to say to the athletes, you tell me when you're ready. So it's not just me trying to work out, are you ready? I'm going, you let me know when you're ready. So they go, oh, we reckon we're ready now. Okay, so let's go, performance. That performance stage, it may be, there may be 3 minutes in that and they go back to learning. It's not like, right, we do 30 minutes here, 30 minutes there. But the real difference is, and there's two of them, there's a real difference between challenging and performing. Now, even at elite level, when I've worked at the highest level in sports, when they've thought they've been in challenge it, they've been in perform it. They haven't really been in challenge it. The coaches are still wanting it to be successful. No, in challenge it, you're attempting to break it. You're attempting to find the weak links in it. It's a totally different mentality. But the important element is the coaches share with the athletes which one we're in initially. So they know, oh, we know we're in learn it now. So my expectation is different. Now I'm in perform it now. Okay, there is an expectation that now I'm starting to follow it through. We should start to see some outcomes. It's not going to be 100%. The other key thing, linking back to what you said there, is when we're in that match situation, if we've done the challenge it right, we will have more confidence in the athletes. But still, athletes may still have an unfair expectation of execution in a match. An example may be they're up against a higher capability player. And all of a sudden they're going, oh, no, I don't want to do that, coach. I don't think I'll be able to pull it off. Because they're thinking, I want a 90% success rate, let's make it up, in my head as a player. But I'm against this player now, on man on, and no way I'm going to be doing this. So I don't want to do it. I feel unconfident because their expectation may be different than the coach. The coaches may be going, no, I still want you to do that, because that's forcing that opposition player, even if, you know, they start to get successful, it's forcing them to do something that I want them to do that's going to give the team something. So keep doing it. You know, don't worry about the outcome of it, but I want you in that. I want you on that side loaded up. Can you do that for me? So then it's up to that coach to take away that expectation so they understand why I'm asking you to do that, because that's helping us on the other wing, or it's getting them, that opposition player, involved mentally in something.
Yeah, so I guess if it's effective, you know, effective what you're saying is in making sure that all the players fully understand they've always got a role to play in the outcome of the overall team. In which case, you know, I think a good and easy example of that is maybe getting players to move, understanding that your movement is not always for you. Sometimes it's movement to create space for someone else, as a basic kind of example of that. And I think As I'm thinking about it there, it's almost, how do you get, again, it goes back to what I said earlier, right, in terms of how do you make sure they're more consciously aware of the variables that influence their ability to perform, but actually, rather than looking at it from just an individual perspective, it's, right, what does this mean for everyone around us? So I guess coming back to, you know, I guess the initial conversation or the initial topic of what we kind of were going to explore around fostering a more positive and engaging learning environment. I mean, you've given a few different ways in which you can do that, because very much of what you've said is about being bespoke around the individual and their learning needs. but also creating some consistencies across of, you know, your approach to how you do it, and not necessarily in the behaviors specifically, because obviously those behaviors might be a bit more tailor-made and specific to the individual you're engaging with, but the meaning behind the behaviors, would that be a fair way to kind of represent it?
Yeah, and I think the two other key elements to this is making sure everyone understands what the lighthouse is for the team. You know, why are we doing these things? What is our purpose? And then understanding what is your role within this, in the big picture, but also in this session, in this defense, in this midfield, whatever it may be. What is your purpose on and off the ball? And then getting them all to understand is, I am not here as a coach to tell you where to stand and what to do. My role here is to help you understand how to read the game to make the best choices live as a combination and adapt live. So there's only one way I can do that, is for you to think, to read the game, to understand the game, to have confidence to make choices based on what you see, but also have confidence to qualify and quantify your choices with others and with me to help me understand you so I can fill in the gaps. So that is a real culture, that is an environment where we're going, look, it's not just saying at the beginning of the season, I'm going to do this. So there may be times when you go, oh, coach, just tell me what you want me to do. And then I go, remind me why we're doing it. Remind me the purpose. Okay, so talk to me what happened over there. So let's eliminate the I don't know coaches. Let's eliminate, well, just tell me what to do, because remember our purpose. Remember my role as a coach now may be different to what you're used to. And that's where the engagement stuff, that's where them qualifying and quantifying, that's their having the freedom to commit to a choice without fear and not think, what does coach want me to do now? But coach will be interested in why I did it.
I love that. Because again, it just speaks to a lot of how I work personally. Because I'm less interested in what you decide to do, more interested in what your process was in deciding that was what you were going to do, right? Because that tells me a lot about what you're paying attention to, maybe what you're maybe missing out on or what you're overlooking. But also maybe not even none of those things. It might just be what you're accepting as useful and unuseful information from what you've processed, right? And there's so much in this, I guess. You know, as we look to kind of wind up then, what would you say are some of the key things that you think? Let's start from a coaching perspective, first of all, that you think coaches can kind of really go away and start to really just implement within their environments. Because there's going to be a lot of coaches that might be listening to this thinking, right, this stuff is going to be foreign to me because I'm used to going in and correcting and everything I see, giving players solutions in the hope that they're just going to stick with those solutions. But one of the challenges I have with that approach is, well, yeah, you can give them solutions. It's not the end of the world. And I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. But I think a better place to kind of come in from is, do they understand why that solution is a solution in the first place? In which case, you're taking them back to the variables which are going to impact their ability to perform and execute, right?
Yeah. I mean, I can chuck a list out here and then see a coach might go, oh, yeah, I can do that one. Or I will commit to that one, which is slightly different than I can. So it always starts off, film yourself. If you can't film yourself, just put the phone in your pocket and press voice record and do a hot review afterwards. Literally go, right, even to yourself on a voice recorder. They've all got them on the phone, right? This is my state. This is what I thought my interventions. And then listen or watch back and just go, how accurate am I and what I think I'm doing and what I am doing? Align to the type coach I want to be and the type team I want to be. So then you can ask yourself, if I want a team to be able to adapt live and have confidence making decisions, irrelevant if you want them to play a certain way, then ask yourself, am I cultivating that in my practices? Because that's the first question you can ask is. And then another little thing they could do, you could do both, but another thing, get an Excel sheet, put the names of all your players on the Excel sheet. Then after every single session, put a note next to on the date on the top and next to each player, which ones did you interact with and how effective was the interaction and what percentage was who talking, i.e. that was 90% coach, 10% player. And over a week, start to spot the trend is, and it commonly could be, wow, there's 20% of players always interact with, these players aren't. And then you can set yourself a challenge. Well, these are important players. They play on my pitch or court. I need to interact with them. I need to know what's going on in their heads. So how can I do that then? How can I have a strategy to do that?
Yeah. And again, I'm thinking about that one out loud now. It's just,
that's a real challenge for a lot of coaches though, because for a lot of coaches they're gonna gravitate towards certain players, because at least from my experience, some coaches gravitate towards certain players because they believe those are the ones that understand it. I'm saying, well, those are the ones that probably do. It's not to say that you should disregard them and you shouldn't give them any support, but the support needs to look different for them. In fact, how can you utilize those players that understand it to engage with those that might not? Which then kind of brings me onto the point of coach developers. And I guess, what does that look like in a coach development environment for you, in the sense that, I guess where we've moved as a society and as a, not just in football, but just in general, I believe, with a lot more coaches being given freedom to explore and express their way of wanting to work, and then being able to appropriately check and challenge that to see effectiveness. Because for a lot of coaches, I think there is a challenge right now where in pursuit of coaching in a way that they want to coach, there's often a lot of things that are overlooked. I don't know what your initial thoughts are on that.
Yeah, it's probably another podcast, but the short version is, and there's two angles to this as well. I'm sticking for twos as much as I can, so we don't go 3, 4, 5s, the main two, is one is, they're slightly different angles. One is, make sure if you're a coach, you're picking the right coach mentor for your needs. So some people, I will not be the right person for them, because some people want a counselling type mentor, where they can sit down, have a cup of coffee, vent, you know, have a bit of a wise listen, you know, I'm there for you, bit of empathy. I'm not that. I do that as well. But my stuff would be, look, if we're pre-agreeing stuff, this is what I've seen. These are the options, you know, aligned to what you said you want to. Here's my recommendations. Here's the suggestions. Which one are you going to commit to? Okay, what does that look like? And then I will be there to support you, but I will be there to challenge you if you don't do what you said, and quantify and qualify it. So I would be ideal and amazing for some people, but some people wouldn't last 3 weeks for me because they wouldn't do anything. So the point of a coach mentor is, if you're sharing things, make sure it's aligned to their needs, but also then make sure they do it. And if they're not doing it, identify why. It's not disciplinary, is identify, okay, so what's preventing you? But let's have the discussion, because there's no point in me being here if we're agreeing stuff and you're not doing it. So I think that's one element, that, you know, the right coach mentor. But I think the other side of that is that, make sure before you go on the journey as a coach or a coach mentor, you collate enough data about that coach and that environment to allow you to make informed decisions about how you can enhance them, how you can help them. But if you don't pre-agree the clarity of what their lighthouse is, you know, what are their needs, what do they think their needs are aligned to what you're seeing, and start that discussion there, then sometimes it gets a very wishy-washy down the route, because you're going to have that invisible gray, as I call it, where you think they should be doing this, the coach thinks I should be doing this, I'm doing great, but because you haven't had that clarity at the beginning, it all becomes a bit of a, let's not discuss it, or you get a bit of a conflict going on, which leads to nothing.
Okay, I guess, you know, that's really important, because obviously effectively what you're saying there is, look, let's agree on what we're going to go after, let's agree on how we're going to do it. And I guess the thing that came out to me as you were speaking there was, even if it means we start with only one thing, let's go after that one thing. Like, it doesn't have to be a multitude of things. It doesn't have to be a whole, you know, a whole long to-do list of things that we're going to get done. There might be things that we want to get done later down the line, but also be open to the fact that that one thing, through discussion, through interaction, through consultation, we may decide that that one thing might need to change it as we go through it. So again, it goes back to the reflection piece, right? What you're holding, hot and cold reflections. What, you know, what are you deeming to be, I'd probably say, vital at this point in time. What's a want? What's a nice to have? But what's a need?
Yeah, identify the priority and understand, well, let's commit to this, because part of, I'll give you an example now. I'm working with Wake Forest. We're moving into our second year now with some of the coaches, but the whole year has been about, the first 3-4 months was about building commitment to change within the coaches, you know, actually being okay with going, I'm going to consistently commit to something I'm not yet good at. I don't yet do, but I see the value of, because once you start building that habit, once you start getting comfortable doing that, then everything, new stuff is easier. But if we don't spend the energy to go, your first challenge is commit to things you don't normally do. If the barrier happens that they don't commit to it more than a day or a session, it's not working, I'm going to revert back, then you're just setting up failure, because nothing, it's just going to be our dab in and dab out. And if a coach feels they need to change, well, that's why you've got a coach developer. Otherwise, what's the point? Is you've got to go through the process of that discomfort of potentially the drop in performance in your own communication behaviors before you get the uplift. And if you're not willing to go through that, not saying it's always a dip, sometimes you get like eurekas, then the whole journey is going to be disruptive, or you're just going to end up with a negative association with coach developing, because you're just going to revert back. So that's so important, that just making sure you may have had 20, 30 years as a coach, and all of a sudden now you're saying, you know, I want to change. Well, let's identify why, what's the need. Let's focus on what that first thing is, and let's build success in committing to change. Because once we've built success there, things get easier.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with that. And I think a great point, just to kind of finish on what you just said there and really draw upon, is that it's not always going to go well. But that it shouldn't be the measurement of success. And, you know, I guess if there's a takeaway from the moments where it doesn't go well, it's a better understanding of why it didn't. Yeah. So that, you know, again, going back to the reflection piece, but you know, there's so many more questions I've got, but I'm conscious that we'll be moving into another podcast completely, and maybe two or three more. I mean, you mentioned that the topic could take us 6 hours to get through some of this stuff anyway, but I just want to say a massive thank you again for your time, Mark. And you know, if there's anywhere you want to signpost people to in terms of exploring your content a little bit more as well.
Yeah, everything on social media is PDS Coach, so Papa Delta Sierra. On my website, there's my online membership area, which is about 150 hours of all this stuff, tutorials, examples of it, video, Q&As, discussions. So if you want a resource that you can't afford a coach, mentor, that you just want to go, that's a reference I can get into, that might be ideal for somebody. But also, I'm here for coach mentoring as well, so you can get in touch through the website if you feel, you know, you can handle a bit of Mark as your coach developer or organizational change within your whole team.
Awesome Mark, thank you again for your time, I really appreciate it.
Thanks,
I think it was number three, not number four, but
yes. Well, last question for you, what's your main takeaway from this?
There's a couple, but I think the one that stands out the most is just becoming more aware. So it's just challenging myself, not just myself, but even within the work that I do, whether it be with players or athletes or coaches, is getting them to have a better understanding and consolidation in recognition of why they're doing what they're doing and how and where impact is being had, what's leading to the impact. So I think, again, it's that awareness piece. I think that piece is so key, because if we can start to become aware of what's given us the successes in the first place, then we avoid going off the scripts and everything becomes a bit more organic. And then we go back to the piece that you talked about earlier, right, in terms of wisdom and judgment. Well, wisdom and judgment comes from experiences that have maybe been reflected on and have been consolidated as knowledge. At least that's how I see it. And I think that's probably the one that kind of just a takeaway, in the sense that it's maybe just further affirmed the importance of that for me. So yeah, no, it's a really good one. Like I said, for me, it's just constantly reflecting, well, why have we done what we've done? What allowed us to get the success that we did? And not always, I guess, measuring it based on the outcome that we've got, but measuring the process. Because I think that is the hardest bit, right? And I think it takes me back to a conversation I remember having with a parent before, where they basically said, oh, my child's not necessarily enjoying the experience, and they've not developed, is what they said as well. And I said, okay, well, without telling me about how many goals they've scored, without telling me about how many assists they've got, without telling me specifically around how many minutes you think they may or may not have played, explain to me how you're measuring their enjoyment and their development. And it wasn't to get an answer, but it was more just to get them to think, actually, can I articulate this in a way where I don't have to mention those three things? Because if you can, then fantastic. We can have a conversation on how you measure development. If you can't, it maybe tells us about what you're focused on.
and it's not process, it's outcome. So I think that that's, you know, those are kind of some key takeaways and just, you know, where it kind of resonates with me a little bit.
It's back to the business tagline, performance is a behavior, not an outcome.
There you go.
The devil is in that behavioral source, facilitators. That's where all the magic happens.
110%. So now, again, no, really good reflective conversation for me. Mark, I really appreciate your time again, man. Massive thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.